Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right. Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Dr. Lyle. How are you doing this fine evening?
Good, particularly with that fancy new intro. That's great. Now we're real. Now we're the real deal. Okay. All right.
Well, we've got a couple of callers on hold, so we're going to get to them fairly soon. But I was reading an article. Now, the LA Times is not known for their evolutionary psychology viewpoints.
But it's basically
an op-ed piece about higher education, and the headline, you'd be surprised, was the following: what students know that experts don't. School is all about signaling, not skill building.
Wow.
The author, he's a professor at George Mason University.
Yes.
And he's actually sprinkling in quite a bit of this stuff that we've talked about, that you've talked about throughout the article.
Yes.
One of the points I really liked, he says, quote, "If a student wants to study at Princeton, he doesn't really need to apply or even pay tuition. He can just simply show up and start taking classes. There's little a professor can do to stop them. But at the end of the 4 years, the student would lack one precious thing, a diploma."
Yeah.
Dr. Lyle, these ideas are spreading. He sprinkles this all in throughout the article. Really fairly fascinating.
Terrific. One drip at a time. The truth is finding its way through the cracks. That's terrific. Good eye.
All right. Let's get to our caller. Our caller is calling. Her name is Cara. Cara, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nate. Hi, Dr. Lau.
Hi there. Good deal. So, Cara, tell us a story. So where are you calling to us from?
I'm calling from Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Oh, the land of the pleasure trap. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. All right. Well, tell us the story. What's going on? What are we working on? And what are we trying to get better?
I'm originally from Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling because I want to make my mom's mom's life better, but she resists my efforts.
Okay.
And I just don't understand why.
Okay.
She lives in Singapore with my sister, and then they kind of form a coalition. My sister is highly intelligent, but she's also highly disagreeable on the far end of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, she knows how to talk to my mom and, you know, get her on her side.
Right.
And my husband and I, we spend money on her house so she can rent it out to get some rental income.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, right now, because she lives with my sister, who my sister have never lived on her own before, and she's a hoarder.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get my mom to find my sister a place, kind of, you know, get the little birdie out of the nest.
Right.
Kind of rent her a place so that and a storage place so she can move all her boxes into storage. But my mom just won't do it. And and when my husband and I and my brother sit together with her at a restaurant to talk to her about it, she would just be very quiet, and she would keep her head down. She would have this smirk on her face as if, oh, well, you guys are trying to control me, and I'm not going to do what you guys are going to tell me to do. At night, she would call my sister to report to her what went on during the meeting.
Okay. All right, Cara. Let's just back up for a second. So what's your mom's age?
She's going to be 70 this coming April.
Okay. And is she retired?
Yes.
Okay, your mom's retired. Okay. And your sister's how old?
She's 46.
46 years old, okay? And lives with your mom?
Yes.
Okay. Now, has your mom ever expressed an interest in your sister moving out?
Yes.
She has. Tell me what she said on those occasions. What kinds of noises does she make?
Well, my sister is trying to apply for her own living situation, but
okay.
she expect my mom to pay for the down payment of
okay.
the studio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but let me get this straight. So the sister actually is looking to and wants to move out.
Yes, but it's going to be
okay.
another 3 more years.
Okay, it'll be 3 years until she can, I don't know how Singapore works, it's 3 years until she could get a place. Is that how that works, or is it 3 years before she would be financially able to?
Before the government give her a place to live.
Got it. That's what I understand. So it's so it's obviously completely different than the US. So your sister is on the list, and 3 years from now, if she has the money, she can get herself a place. That's how that works?
Yeah.
Okay. And your sister, does your sister have the money, or is she not have the money and looking for your mom to help?
She's looking for my mom to help.
Okay. Does she have the money herself or no?
I don't think she has enough money to pay for the down payment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
all right.
Go ahead.
Right. So she doesn't have enough money. She's living with your mom. Does your sister work?
Yes. She recently got a full-time job.
Okay. So she recently got herself a full-time job. So now she's got herself a full-time job, and ostensibly she is she's living with your mother. Does she pay any rent or anything like that?
No, and we during several discussions, we asked my mom to collect some rent from her, but my mom tell us, well, if you guys are in trouble, meaning me and my brother, and we need a free room, she would gladly provide that free room to us.
Right.
So she
right.
says she will never collect rent from any of her kids.
Right. Okay. All right. That's all cool. So your mom, like, how many children does your mom have?
3.
3. And so it's you and then your sister, and then what's your other sibling?
And my younger brother.
A younger brother. And what does he do and where does he live?
He lives in Hong Kong. And
okay.
He has his own business. He has a wife and 2 kids.
Okay. And is he reasonably successful?
Yes.
Okay. So he's independent.
Me and my brother, we do anything we can to provide for our mom if she needs we take her to restaurants, and me and my husband, we don't have kids, so we'll take her with us on our vacation.
Right. Okay. So let me get the I'm just trying to get the lay of the land here. So your mom is retired, and she has her own place in Singapore, and she also has a rental on her property or something like this.
Yes, we fixed up her house so that she can rent it out. And that's the reason why she can retire. And that's also the reason why my sister was able to get a job, because my mom used the money from the rental income to pay for my sister's education.
Right, okay.
So my sister went to school, went back to school,
Got it. So your mom was sort of intelligently frugal about this income from, what does she have, like essentially now a duplex?
A house and a flat.
Got it. A house and a flat. Are they on the same lot or are they apart?
No, not on the same lot.
They're not on the same lot. So they're a little bit different places in Hong Kong or in Singapore.
In Singapore, yes.
Okay. So, but your sister and your mother are piled into the same house?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. And how large or small is that house? Do you have a feel for it?
The house that they live in or the house that she's renting out?
The house they live in.
It's a two-bedroom flat, and the situation is pretty bad because my sister put a bunch of boxes in the living room, and there's really not much room to walk from the front door to my mom's
right.
bedroom.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of stuff in the kitchen. So what
yeah.
I'm trying to do is to get all the stuff out and kind of renovate her kitchen and her bathroom. But my mom said that,
yeah.
well, the government's going to take back that flat in about 10 years, and it's
yeah.
not worth the trouble spending that money. But I told my mom, hey, you know, you're in your 70s, and, you know, if you can spend another 5-10 years living in a nicer place, you know, it's worth the money spent. But my sister will talk her out of it because
okay.
she wants to put her stuff in the living room. And one
right.
time when I went back to visit my mom, I was pretty mad at my sister because she had put all her clothes on top of my mom's bed. And my mom had a queen-size bed, and she only had enough room to sleep on one side of the bed.
Right.
And her clothes was piled like a mountain high on top
right.
of my mom's bed.
Right. Okay. Now let's just let's talk a little bit further. So in theory, what's going to go on is that your sister is going to be moving out in 3 years when she gets this flat. Correct?
Maybe.
Well, maybe. I don't know because sometimes my sister would threaten to say, "Well, I'm going to quit in March." And then
okay.
I don't know why she would do something like that. You know, it's hard to get a job, so I don't know.
Right.
Why she would
and
do
your mom
then.
And your mom? Let me get this straight. So your mom will only the way this works is where she lives. She will only have access to it for another 10 years.
Yes.
Okay, and then the government literally claws it back and takes it from her.
Yes.
Does she get paid for this, or is it just essentially the government's property?
Yeah, she gets paid for it.
Okay, so they insist that they take it back, and then they pay her for it, and then they give it to somebody else.
No, they're just going to rebuild new housing.
Ah, okay. So they're gonna tear the place down and rebuild something?
Yes.
Okay, so So her place is scheduled to be leveled by a wrecking ball, and then they're going to rebuild everything new, but the government's going to give them a check.
Yes.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. So your mom is saying, why put any money into making it nice? Because the truth is they're going to wreck it anyway.
Yeah.
Right, and your attitude is, hey, it's 10 years of your life, and it's maybe the last 10 years you've got. Why wouldn't you want to live decently?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So now let's look at the other real estate involved, which is this flat that she rents out that you helped them fix up. Okay, so
yeah.
How long has your mom owned that flat? The rental.
The house is rented out for about, I would say, about 10 years now.
Okay.
She's owned it since I was a little kid.
Okay, she's owned it forever. And
yeah.
you guys helped her fix it up. She gets good rent
yes.
for it, and that enables her to be comfortably retired. The all right, so that given that real estate must be what very expensive in Singapore, so that represents a pretty important net worth. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So the rent from this and that house is. Did you tell me that's a 3-bedroom house?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a 3-bedroom house on a lot. So. That represents fairly high luxury for Singapore, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a good amount of rental money. So she owns that thing outright. So as a result, her sister doesn't have any financial anxiety because mom's got plenty of income, is that correct?
Right.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry to be chuckling, but the reason I'm chuckling is that we have an interesting thing. I'm going to keep asking you a few more questions before I try to shed a little bit of light on this. Your mother, how long has your sister been living with your mother?
Ever since she graduated from college,
which is
in her 22, I guess.
Got it. So she's been with your mom 20 years.
Yes.
As an adult, living in your mom's, living in that, were they living in the house before, or are they living in this flat?
They were living in the house before together.
Yeah.
But then, because my sister is very highly disagreeable, so my my mom moved out to the flat, to the two-bedroom flat that she's living now.
Yeah.
And then she got married, and then she got divorced.
Yeah.
And then after she got divorced, my sister was living in the house that my mom's renting out now, and for those years, my mom didn't have rental income because my sister was living
right
there.
Right.
And then so when I went back to Singapore, I noticed that the house was in a mess.
Yeah.
So me and my brother and my husband kind of asked my sister to move out.
Yeah.
And we fixed it up. That's the reason why my mom can rent out that house. Otherwise, my sister will still be living in that house now without any rental income for my mom.
Right. Okay. And what happened?
Then after my mom divorced, my sister went to live with my mom in the
flat
because the house is rented out now.
And so your sister, all right. So now, and she's been living in this flat now with your mother for how long?
10 years.
10 years. 10 years. Okay. So, And your mother, interestingly enough, tell me about her, how much she has squawked to you about your sister living in that flat with her. What ways has she complained?
She said she's just messy and sometimes she would leave stuff on the floor, and she might step on it at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So let me ask you something else. This your parents, did your dad pass away, or were they divorced?
My dad, he left the family.
Okay. All right. So now we're going to go to this second marriage of your mother's. Do you know enough about the dynamics to know about whether did he leave her? Did he, or was this her instigating? Or what were the dynamics that went down there?
He's a gambler.
Got
it. And he tried to get money from my mom, and my sister said that she kind of helped my mom in some way by not paying him a huge sum of money for divorce settlement.
Yeah.
And, you know, all this happened when I was in the United States and my brother is not there in Singapore. So, you know, so my mom kind of depends on my sister emotionally sometimes.
Right.
And he kind of get advice from her.
Yes. It sounds like your sister's disagreeability was useful in that instance.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, your mom, this is interesting because with you and your brother and your husband, when you sit her down in a coffee shop and you say, "Mom, you know, why don't we show your sister the door?" Incidentally, your sister with her new job, how long has she been on her new job?
About a year and a half or maybe 2 years.
Ah, okay, a year and a half. And do you know if she makes enough money on the new job to afford her own apartment?
Not really, not for the down payment.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to do a down payment to rent a place?
you have to do a down payment, and then I guess you have to pay a monthly mortgage.
Yeah, yeah, that's not what I'm asking. Is there such thing as renting in Singapore? Not owning, not buying, renting.
Yes.
Okay. Does your sister's job pay her enough money that she could rent her own place?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Okay. So your mom, how smart is she still at 70 years old? Is she pretty with it?
She's pretty smart, but we're just worried she's suffering some mental decline now.
Okay, I'm hearing you. That's why I'm asking. The this has been going on for 10 years. Your sister's been parked inside your mom's tiny little flat with an enormous amount of crap, and essentially they're living this bizarre kind of a life. And
yes.
She is the only sibling that is, you know, within 100 miles. So
yes.
she is your mother's. She has also intimidated a thief of a second husband and ran him off. And so your mother legitimately has trust that your sister understands her own best interests well enough to protect your mom's best interests generally. And as long as your mom is not screaming and throwing her stuff out into the street, then your sister gets to keep all the crap, and your mom adapts to it. Now, your mom should be smart enough to understand that your sister has enough money from income that she could rent, okay? And she could just go ahead and keep working and rent to the end of her days. And then when your mom ever passes away, if there's an inheritance, then maybe your sister could buy something for herself then. But the point is that your mom kind of doesn't this way. What I hear in your estimation of how it is that one should manage these real estate issues is that nobody's thinking they should ever rent. Everybody's thinking they should always own. And so therefore, God forbid, your sister can't actually move out at 46 and live like a regular working person that rents and can't afford a home in an expensive area. No, we're going to stay right there and you know, save money and wait for the 3 years when the government makes it possible for her to buy a place, and then maybe she moves out and maybe she doesn't. Yeah, this is kind of ludicrous. Now, your mom, meanwhile, has her own interesting hoarding mentality, which says, hey, I don't need a decent life now, not when they're going to knock this place down in 10 years. We wouldn't want to waste any money. This is like hilarious. Okay. I've seen this book before. I've got all kinds of older people with plenty of net worth, and yet they're clipping coupons, and they don't want to spend $6 on Uber. They're just going to walk to the store, okay, across a busy street. So this is who they are. I assume your mom is pretty frugal.
Yes, very.
Yeah, I think we got this picture. Your mom probably couldn't stand the idea of your sister running an apartment, because that would seem like money down the drain. It would just seem like a catastrophic waste of resources. So she's not going to allow that to happen. So that's that. This is your mom's frugality. And unless I'm getting this wrong, has she ever said to you, boy, I wish she'd move out and just rent her own place?
She said to me before, I told her one time, I said, hey, you know what, I'm just going to let the Singapore government know that there's this elderly abuse situation going on where she just put place and stuff on the floor and you might kick yourself at night and fall down and nobody would know. And then she said, well, don't do that. Don't complain, because if she complain, then she'll lose her job. And then if she loses her job, she can't move out. And I don't want to take care of her for the rest of my life. So that's what she told me one time.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. So but what I'm saying is that she has not raised the issue that your sister ought to be getting her own place and moving out. she's, in other words, the scheme here, as I'm hearing it, is that we're going to wait until your sister can purchase. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So there's no serious consideration that your sister ought to just leave and rent, and that we ought to deal with the down payment situation later and worry about that financial problem later, that your mom is essentially not that desperate to get rid of your sister. She's willing to be patient and wait for this 3-year process.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's because your mom, is your sister responsible enough that she would actually be saving her money? Is she spending it, spending it and hoarding more crap?
I think she's spending it on a lot of crap.
A lot of crap, and she's not saving a nickel. Right. So three years from now, she's going to expect your mother or somebody else, you and your brother, to come up with a down payment so that she'll leave your mom's house.
She's expecting it from my mom.
Got it. So she's expecting it from your mom. What kind of down payment is this? $100,000? I have no idea what these places cost.
It's about $80,000.
Got it. $80,000. And if your mom, does your mom have that cash, or would she have to mortgage a house?
Well, she don't have it. Hmm. What happened was, I actually, 2 years ago, I offered them to move into my place for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can go through their boxes slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so I let them stay at my place for 6 months. But it's been 2 years. 2 years later,
yeah,
not only did they not go through their stuff, my sister actually bought more crap. So when I came back, I was pretty mad at them, and then I just kind of kicked myself out of my house, and then she went back to live with my mom.
Yeah.
And,
all right. The bottom line is that one way or the other, there's enough net worth in this tree that somehow $80,000 will arrive if your sister still has a job, for her to have a down payment to move into a house that your mom won't feel like she's throwing money down the drain for rent. Okay? And that'll be the moment of truth. Are you still there?
Yes.
Good. Okay. I just heard a click, so I wasn't sure. So that'll be the moment of truth as to whether or not your sister's actually willing to continue to work for a living. The fact that she's worked for a living for a year and a half, there's just an outside chance that she would actually be willing to continue to work for a living indefinitely and take your mom up on her offer of $80,000 to have your sister have her own place. Okay? Maybe that
mm-hmm.
happens, maybe it doesn't. I don't see that your mom can psychologically tolerate the idea of forcing your sister out to into an apartment where she's, quote, throwing money away for rent. I have a feeling that that's against her religion, and I don't
mm-hmm.
think that she can do it. Okay? So
mm-hmm.
that's your mom's frugality and extraordinarily high conscientiousness is not going to allow that to happen. So your sister is going to sit right there and accumulate crap by the cubic foot as much as she can cram into that little 2-bedroom flat. I mean, it's a total fiasco. But you also have to understand it's not an emergency, because it's the same fiasco that's been going on for 10 years. And
right.
it's going to go on probably another 3 years. And your mother trusts your sister as a nice, disagreeable bulldog, that she is actually, she's a useful person to not only defend because she's her own genetics, but also that she will defend the mom against other people and threats that could possibly stand in your mom's way. And so as a result, or that could possibly harm or exploit your mother. So in essence, better the genetic devil we know than the non-genetic devil that we don't know. And so your mom is pretty comfortable in that circumstances. I mean, it's not great, but if it was really lousy and she really couldn't stand that, then she would be raising a bigger fuss than she's raising. Okay? Your mom has a voice and she has emotions. She just doesn't have, she's not looking at the situation the same way you're looking at it. So this is, this is, I believe, Kara, that what I'm going to explain to you, I mean, it seems like it, I don't mean to be patronizing, but it is a very, very easy mistake to make, and I believe you're making it. You may not be, but I believe that you are. So this is what we call the egocentric bias. The egocentric bias is the natural human tendency to believe that other people are thinking and feeling and having the same kind of responses to a situation than we would. This is an interesting characteristic of people because it's a massive improvement over an animal that does not have an egocentric bias. So an animal that is trying to understand what another animal is doing or to predict it, can predict as best it can from the movements that the animal tips off, the direction it moves, where its eyes look like they're looking, etc. But the truth of the matter is that a human being can place itself in another person's shoes and can actually get a guess of what that other person is thinking, feeling, and what they're likely to do by what it is that they would be thinking and feeling if they were in that circumstances. So the egocentric bias is part of an empathic mechanism with a bunch of mirror neurons where people are trying to essentially guess what other people, must be thinking and feeling. And unfortunately, they bring themselves into the equation because they don't have no way of integrating a bunch of other cues about who that person is very effectively. So pretty much their nervous system says, well, what would we feel if we were in that circumstance? Okay? And so the... this is why men, for example, have a horrible time seeing two good-looking men kiss, heterosexual males. It'll drive them crazy. Okay, they never want to see it in their lifetime because they would put themselves in each of the other guy's shoes, and it freaks them out. Okay, whereas watching two good-looking women kiss, it's like, well, that's okay. I don't have any problem with that because they put themselves in each of those women's shoes, kissing the other female, and it's all Jake, okay? So this is the egocentric mechanism. You are not a hoarder. You don't have the screwball neural circuits that are involved there, and you like things, I'm going to guess, orderly, simple, orderly, elegant, artistic, and decent. Yeah, is that a decent wild guess?
Kind of.
Okay, I may have overshot it. But the truth is that your disgust and frustration with what your sister's done to your mom's living space tells me that you are pretty upset when you see it. And the truth of the matter is that your mom is probably only about 25% as upset as you are. If she was upset as you are, she would have done something about it. She would have circled the wagons with you and your brother and said, listen, I need help. I got to push back. Okay. I got to get this crap out of here. It's driving me crazy. Yeah, okay. That would drive me nuts to have that situation. But it's not driving your mom nuts. Your mom adapts to it. It's vastly less disturbing to her than it is to you. It is disturbing. So she will occasionally arise a peep out of her to let you know that she doesn't like it. But at the same time, she's running, whenever you're trying to understand why people are doing what they're doing, what we must look for is we must look for cost-benefit analysis. And cost-benefit analysis is effectively the top quark when it comes to understanding the nature of human beings. So your mom's running a cost-benefit analysis, and she listens to you and your brother, and she listens to what it is that you're saying, and she smiles kind of secretly and basically says to herself, it's not that bad. I'm not in that bad a shape, and I'm not going to raise Cain with my daughter, who's perfectly decent and protects me, and I'm looking out for her, and we look out for each other, and it's going to be okay. All right? It's well tolerable. So that's kind of what I'm telling you. And so what I'm actually telling you is your mom's life isn't that bad. When you put yourself in her shoes, you feel like, wow, this is bad. Okay, this would drive me nuts. I wouldn't tolerate this for 2 weeks. But your mom is not having that reaction. Okay, your mom is having a reaction that says, yeah, I don't like it. I'd like this stuff to be gone, but it's not that bad. So that's what I'm telling you. So the egocentric bias is absolutely fascinating. You'll see it all over the place. Just watch the next time when you watch two people and they share each other's food, or particularly think about the circumstances between a mother and child, and the mother puts a piece of broccoli or asparagus on that kid's fork and says, "It's good, try it." And the kid tastes it and goes, "No, I don't like it." And the mom's like, "What do you mean it's good?" Okay? It is an absolutely comical event that the mother cannot grasp the fact that the child is tasting the same thing that the kid is tasting, but the kid does not, I mean, the same thing the mom's tasting, but the kid doesn't like it, but the mom does like it. And the mom's attitude, there's nothing wrong with this. It's good. And the kid's like, "Yeah, well, I don't like it." The mom just thinks the kid's being obstinate and difficult. No, the kid is giving an honest report. Okay, so the egocentric bias can, even though it's useful as a first pass guess to understand what other people are going through, and is enormously helpful to have an egocentric capability, to have the empathic capability of putting ourselves in their shoes. But the limitations are that we bring our own personality with us, and therefore we can be thinking something is an emergency and intolerable and ridiculous and exploitative and, you know, mentally exhausting, when the truth is it isn't. It's just a daughter that you love that's a slob, and she can live with it. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
All right. Great call. Great call, Cara. Thank you very much for calling, and we really appreciate you listening and giving us a good call.
Cara, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. All the way from Singapore and Las Vegas. All right, we've got another caller on hold here. Kathy?
All right.
Kathy?
I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
Got it.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
All right.
Dr. Lyle.
Yeah.
It's me again.
Good. All right.
I'll try to talk quickly. So
sure.
I wanted to thank you for spending so much time with me last time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say it was really refreshing to hear you call my dad a shithead narcissist. And if I had heard that 8 years ago from a therapist, I think I would have recovered a little faster.
All right.
I'm still stuck in a loop here. And I just wanted to quickly talk a little bit more about my mom, because at the end of our conversation, it almost sounded like you gave her she sounded like a very sympathetic character.
Mm-hmm.
And while I know she was married to a narcissist, and I know she sacrificed a lot and all that, her behavior since my dad died has really confused me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually been quite mean and cruel in my opinion. And so I'm just trying to understand why. And just to see if I can let go of this horrible sense of betrayal and abandonment.
Right. Got it. Okay. So, yeah, I didn't hear this last time. What I heard was that clearly the mom was, your mom was following suit behind your sister, and the brother
right.
was in line. So we had a definite coalition where they had formed a guano ring around the three of them, and you were on the outside of it. So
right.
that made sense to me, and I could see how that would all play out the way that it would. But what you didn't say last time is what you're saying now about the mom being, quote, mean and cruel. Now, that's a different part of the story. So
right.
tell me, because your mom in some ways, from where I left it, was that I was sympathetic towards her situation, that she was essentially, as described and as I was understanding it, that she was effectively being pulled into an in-group, out-group situation. And that there wasn't really an easy escape, because your sister was definitely going to take the lead, and this was an opportunity, and there was potentially both financial and social psychological chips on the table for kicking
right.
you out of the guano ring and having their own little triumvirate. So
mm-hmm.
and I considered that your mother. Some of the behavior that you described in the aftermath under some of these conflicts indicated that your mother was having cognitive dissonance about it, but would definitely ultimately always wind up in your sister's coalition. Okay.
Okay.
So that's what I had heard. Now okay. tell me a little differently about when you say cruel behavior, mean behavior out of your mother, I assume towards you. Tell me what you mean. Describe some of the circumstances where that has happened that trouble you.
Okay. Well, I think the problem for me was that growing up, she was a really good mother. And
mm-hmm.
although I was lumped in with this group of, you know, my siblings and I were kind of kept as a group, and I wasn't really ever, I never felt like I bonded with my mother individually much.
Mm-hmm.
I was always with my sister doing the girl things with my mom. But in general,
right.
she was a very loving mother, and
mm-hmm.
I felt loved.
Mm-hmm.
After I got married, well, she made it very hard for me to date my husband. There was a lot of resistance there. Finally got married. Everything kind of changed when I got married, which kind of makes sense. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was still cordial, and I felt like we had a decent relationship. After my
mm-hmm.
dad died, I felt like her personality either changed or it became unmasked, because my dad was no longer there
mm-hmm.
dominating her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When I had, I'll just try to give you some quick examples. When I got
mm-hmm.
pregnant, she was happy but not thrilled. You know, didn't really
mm-hmm.
care. She was in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Texas. We invited her to our one and only baby shower. My mother-in-law hosted it in Texas. My mom
mm-hmm.
told me that it was too expensive to come. This is a woman who
mm-hmm.
had just inherited the entire estate. It was
right.
too expensive to come. And a month later went to Europe with a
mm-hmm.
Came to meet my son when he was born, told me that she only came out of obligation because she was still upset about Easter.
Wow.
Things like that. She doesn't ask for pictures of my children. Doesn't show much interest in them. If I send a picture, it's not put up in the house. My relatives
mm-hmm.
have told me she doesn't display pictures of my children.
Mm-hmm.
Just things like that, really not kind. You know, it's been very
yeah.
hard to feel like I lost my whole family in one swoop. My dad died, and then the three of them felt like they all turned on me. So it's been a really traumatic life change.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So now I want to go back to something that you said that was curious. So
okay.
You said she made it hard to date your husband. How old were you when you began dating your husband?
21.
Okay. So you're still in this Christian college at that point? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So were you like a junior or a senior?
I was a senior.
Okay. So you're a senior in college, and he is what? Is he at the college too?
No, he was in, I was in Indiana. He was in
mm-hmm.
Texas.
Okay.
So it was a long-distance relationship. He was finishing up college.
Got it. Okay. What was the circumstances? How did you guys ever meet?
I was an RA
okay.
in my dorm, and his sister was a freshman. She wanted to set us up, so she had him come out for a weekend for us to
That's
meet.
Incredible. That is an unbelievable story. Okay. So some freshman has enough insight and somehow masterfully, you know, bowls a strike. That's
yeah.
an extraordinary story. Okay. So this guy comes up and meets you, and you kind of feel like this is a screaming match even from the jump?
With my mom, no, I honestly knew when I met my husband that he was it. I had that feeling. And I even remember telling my mom over the phone, if this guy isn't the one, I don't know who is. And she was delighted over the phone, hadn't met him yet.
Mm-hmm.
She met him within a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I think she thought, oh, he's really nice. It comes from a nice family. But then there started to be pushback when I was getting serious with him. And, you know, we dated off and on for about 4 years. I kept breaking up with him because of the pressure she put on me.
Tell me about
that. Not my dad.
Tell me about the nature of that pressure, because it's interesting, because now you're like 22, 23, 24. Are you going in grad school, or what are you doing during those years?
We were serious when I graduated from college, but not so serious that I wanted to get married. I wanted to wait a few years. I was just wanting to, we were pretty committed to each other. But I think, you know, I don't remember her saying anything specific that she didn't like about him. She just always said, don't get so serious so quickly. There are other guys out there. You know, I got the feeling, okay, you don't like this one enough, or no one's ever going to be enough.
Yeah, let's slow down for just a second. What I said was, what were you doing between 21 and 25? What were you actually doing?
Okay, well, I graduated from college and did a semester in law school.
Mm-hmm,
got a scholarship to law school, did a semester, knew for sure that was not the right fit for me.
Okay.
Left law school and moved to D.C. and worked in accounting, got myself a job in accounting.
Got it. Okay, so what I'm getting at is that you were self-sufficient.
For the most part, yeah.
Okay, for the most part, you're self-sufficient. If things get a little tight or something happens or you need a tooth fixed, you call home, but basically you're self-sufficient.
Right.
Okay. And so now tell me how it is that, quote, your mom is making it hard to date your husband. Because you're on your own, you're in D.C., you're thousands of miles away. Just give me a little feel for, I'm not trying to hold you to that statement, I'm just trying to understand, you know, why that's how it is that you were seeing it.
She would bristle when she was around him. I think she just didn't. I remember going to the city where I was going to attend law school, and he met us there when I was looking for apartments, and he had his hand on my back at one point, and she complained to me later that he was practically giving you an erotic massage, and he wasn't.
Got it. Okay, so she's just basically. Got this attitude that this guy is not good enough.
Right.
Okay, that's it. This is sort of standard operating procedure now for parents, by the way. So this parents your mom is thinking she can't help herself. She's basically thinking that you can get 10% fancier jeans. So don't do it. Okay. So she can't help herself. So she's being an irritable pain in the ass about this. But this is not exactly huge roadblocks. These are you know, frustrating and a little bit intimidating signals that to be getting from a parent. What about your dad at this point? How does he act towards the whole thing?
You know, he never confronted me about it at all. It's as though he let my mom do all the communicating.
Got it. Okay, but you would have picked up signals from your dad had he been real bent out of shape about it. He's noisy enough. So he didn't have a big dog in this fight. Whereas that your mother, for some reason, this was a much bigger issue for her. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep going. So now did your dad die before you had any kids, or did you have kids first?
He died before I had kids.
Oh, he died. Okay. So then we have the big issue.
Yeah, I actually had a miscarriage right before he died.
Okay. So we have this, issue. So the big fallout happens. It turns out that things have not been cool with your mom and your husband. So she, but before you get married, even when you're married, now we have the big thing, the big shindig at Easter, And now when you have a child, she's like not wanting to go and giving you sort of BS explanations. And essentially she could have easily, had she been significantly ambivalent about her relationship with you relative to her relationship with your brother and sister, she certainly could have used the birth of your child as an excuse to tell the other kids, too bad, yes, I'm on your side, but the truth is your sister's having a baby, and oh my God, I'm having a grandkid, and I'm going to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do it. Okay?
Right.
So now we're seeing that she's really not ambivalent. In fact,
mm-hmm.
she's a member of the triumvirate. Okay?
Yeah.
And she's actually a perfectly comfortable member of the triumvirate. So it's an us against them situation. You are kicked out of the guano ring for whatever reasons those are. And that's that. Okay?
Yeah.
Now that is that's kind of what it looks like. And
okay.
Let's back up for just one second as we talk about this. And that is that family members are people in this, there tends to be the case that family members have a strong possibility to be much closer than friends and even romantic partners. And the reason why that's true is because of the shared genes. So, the shared genes and the possibility for humans and other animals that can compute this, that they can understand that essentially if that's a sibling or that's a child of mine, then half of my genes are located inside that individual. And so therefore, if it costs me 10 units of pain and it aids my sibling 25 units of reduced pain, then it's worth me taking on 10 units of pain to save them 25. And that's because the cutting score would be 20. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to cost me 10 units of pain and I save them 20 units of pain, then you know what? It's barely worth doing because only half of my genes are in there. But if it's going to save them 25 units of pain, then I'm going to do it. Okay? This is the nature, let's forget pain because that'll weird out people's heads. This is possibility of survival, and it could be driven through, for example, the hunger drive. So as you look at your own hunger and you're looking at your own food supply and you're looking at your brother or your sister or your child, okay, child's a little bit different because the truth of the matter is those are the vectors that go into the future, and a brother and sister are essentially, you know, age conspecifics, they're right there with you. So it's a little bit different. And actually at different times in your life, your children are worth more and less. So they're not worth as much when they're 2 years old as they are when they're 12. Because at 12-year-old, they've actually come through an awful lot of potential risk, and they have a highly great likelihood of being a genetic success, whereas a 2-year-old's got a lot of hoops to jump before they get to 18. Okay? So...
Mm-hmm.
There's a complex calculus, but the calculus that drives family bonding in our species is going to be Hamiltonian logic, which is straight Hamilton's rule. That this is all, you know, I've covered this in other broadcasts, but this is C is less than B times R, that the genetic cost of a behavior must be less than the genetic benefit times the degree of relationship between the actor and the recipient. This explains why you will do that. The cost of a behavior, i.e. 10 units of pain, has to be less than the benefit, i.e. 25 units of reduced pain, times the degree of relationship between the actor and the recipient, i.e. if it's a 50% shared genes, then we multiply the 25 by 0.5, and we get the total benefit on that side of the equation to me to be willing to take on that pain for my brother. The benefit is 12.5 units of pain loss reduced for my genes versus 10 cost that I'm going to have to experience by putting my hand in the fire to save his hide. Okay? If it turns out that the cost at 10 units is less than the benefit at 12.5, then that behavior will be selected, that tendency will be selected in evolution. This is why mothers are typically very altruistic towards their children. Okay, but you can see where family dynamics get real dicey. In other words, hey, that cake's worth twice as much to me if I eat it all than it is to me sharing it with my brother. And it's going to turn out that in the blue-footed booby bird, which the mom sprays guano in a ring, and the kids that are inside the ring get protected, and anything else tries to come inside the ring and get those kids, mom will try to kill it. But it turns out that if one of those little chicks gets outside the guano ring, it's too bad for them, and mom won't let them back in. And what's worse is, guess what? Some of the chicks inside the ring will try to push their siblings outside the ring.
Yeah.
Okay? That happens. And so if you happen to be weaker in some way or unlucky and some siblings gang up or a bigger sibling chucks you out of the guano ring and mom sees you outside the ring, it's too bad for you. Okay? So it's going to turn out that as cooperative as relationships often are and altruistic and warm, because the altruism is not driven by some bizarre thing, it's driven by connection and warmth and what we call love. That can happen between unrelated individuals and does, but it can easily happen within related individuals and more often does. But it is not the case that in every case when you share genes with people that you even like them, much less love them. Okay? It just so happens that you happen to be in the same clutch with your sister, and you even are a twin to your brother, and it turns out, guess what? These people, the three of you, you on one side and them on the other, they don't qualify to be your friends. Okay? And you don't seemingly qualify to be your mother's friend. And you may not qualify to be your sibling's friend. It's like, holy smokes, we don't even qualify to be friends. And even with the tremendous added benefit of shared genes, you people can't scratch up positive feelings and allow me in the coalition? And apparently the answer is no.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Okay.
Right.
So this is, you know, this is, of course, you got some open loop about this. And as you look this whole thing over, you were right to catch me and say, wait a second, my mom's not so sympathetic here, okay? And I've got some other things racing around my head. I'm not comfortable. And the reason is that your mom, from the behavior that you're describing, your mom actually looks like not particularly your friend. And when you were a little kid, who you were was not evident. And so, you know, you're an emerging little personality, and she's your mom, and, you know, she's got tremendous maternal instincts, obviously. And so she was cheerfully self-sacrificing little behaviors that made sense to you, and you didn't feel like it was cold and shitty, okay? But when you got older and you were no longer needing, you know, support to survive, and now it's like, well, now wait a second. We're going to now reevaluate these relationships and see whether or not this is a 50-50 reciprocity situation where we like each other enough and are connected enough to make this fly. And it turns out your mom says, I don't even want to see your damn child.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's the shocker
for
me.
Yeah.
I know we have 1 minute, but my question is, what do I do? Do I keep in touch with a person who clearly does not have an interest in me or my family, or do I just keep it cordial for the sake of keeping it cordial?
Yeah, I think that what you do is you don't have to bet and gamble on the right answer. You can my attitude would be, you know what? I sure as hell wouldn't wear myself out hoping to get any positive feedback. This is the disagreeable distance that, you know, this relationship between a couple of family members, their lives might overlap 17%, right? But the truth is that it's not comfortable and people aren't happy. But you know what? The right amount might be 4%. And as we move it down to 4%, we get to tickle our instincts that we've still got a little connection there, a little bit of an insurance policy, you know what I mean? If it was you laying on the street bleeding and somebody else that she didn't know, your mom would pick you and help you. But otherwise, you come in a distant third between behind your two siblings, and fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, my attitude is if you don't, a lot of times, parents, siblings, children, they literally don't qualify to be your friends. And qualifying to be your friend is no easy task. It just so happens that often it's easy in families because of Hamilton's rule. But sometimes if you are genetically enough different than your parents, which you can be, and there is just natural conflicts of how it is that you see the world and how it is that you experience life, and you really can't see eye to eye on things, then maybe you can't. And the right way to overlap your lives is 4%, not 17%. So we can experiment with that, and this is what I call fade to black. We actually push away gently, and we swim a distance away, and we just keep it right there, and we see if our life is better. Okay?
Okay.
And that's how we run little experiments and see if those experiments take us in the right direction.
Okay?
All right. If there may be more, feel free to call again. These are very interesting problems, and I think they're interesting for listeners. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Kathy, thank you very much for calling and sharing us your problem again. Caller that you're on hold, we're going to get to you next week, and we're going to wrap it up right now. Dr. Lyle, thank you very much. Pleasure having you all the time. And
absolutely.
We will look forward to seeing everybody and talking to everybody next week. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.